Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Tiffany Wright as my special expert guest. Dr. Tiffany Wright, the LA Skinny Coach, is an internationally recognized health advocate and weight loss expert. She lost 100 pounds over a decade ago and has helped hundreds of others do the same. She's also the founder of the Sugar Free Initiative, a coalition of experts addressing the issue of sugar addiction. She is dedicated to the study of behavior and weight loss with an emphasis on controlling compulsive overeating behavior. Combining her studies of obsessive dieting and compulsive overeating, along with continuing academic research on how certain foods cause uncontrollable cravings, Tiffany developed the Skinny Coach Solution, which utilizes a whole foods diet with a set of coaching methods developed through her studies on behavioral modification and personality motivation. Good afternoon, Tiffany, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good afternoon, Corey. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you on the show, and I would assume that you're at home base in L.A. How are things down in L.A. these days?
Well, always sunny and beautiful in Venice Beach.
That sounds nice. A little cooler up here in the Great White North, and a lot of us are envious of where you live. But let's talk about you personally for a bit, just so that people can get a framework about you. Mm-hmm. Where did you grow up, and did you play sports? What kind of an upbringing did you have? Did you have health-conscious parents? Did you eat the typical SAD diet? Tell us what that was like.
Sure. I grew up in Southern California, and my mother was significantly obese, morbidly obese, as they would say, medically. My grandmother was as well. And yes, we ate the SAD diet, lots of fast food, lots of boxed food, and I was overweight. I went to my first Weight Watchers meeting with my mom when I was 8. So I was never one of those yo-yo people. I was overweight as a child, and I stayed overweight until I lost the 100 pounds, which will be 19 years in April.
What was it like growing up as a sort of a heavy set child or youngster and the physical education experience? A lot of people have told me that when they were heavy, they felt that that experience was very negative and that they were picked on or made fun of. What was your experience like?
Yeah, I was picked on as a child, but I did go to a private school, a Christian school, and I was picked on through my entire experience. Sports, though, I didn't take a sport, but PE was never really a problem. Even though I was overweight, I kind of excelled. And so the PE situation was never really a major issue, but the teasing certainly was. And it's a common phenomenon I see with my skinny girls, but it's a common phenomenon that if someone is heavy when they're young, it doesn't matter how much they lose weight or how long they're thin, they always see themselves in their head as heavy, and vice versa. So I'll be talking to someone, and when I hear something like, oh, well, I don't feel like I'm that overweight, but then I see myself in the mirror, I get on the scale, and, you know, I'm 70 pounds overweight. And then I know she was a thin girl, she was a thin child. So those kinds of self-images certainly last throughout adulthood.
No doubt. Now, in your bio, it mentions you losing 100 pounds, and there are people left, right, and center losing all kinds of weight, but you seem to have kept it off, and that is what the failure seems to illuminate in people's lives. They can't seem to keep it off. They lose it quickly through some pretty crazy approaches, but tell us how you achieved your goal and why you haven't gained the weight back.
Well, I figured out that I had to use an abstinence model. And the way I figured that out was by sheer luck. I mean, of course, inspiration, luck always comes on the heels of years of experience. It never just pops up, right? So at the time, I was working on my PhD, and a colleague of mine was working with addicts, with alcoholics. She was overweight, and so was I, and she said something a lot of overweight people say, I wish I was just addicted to alcohol instead of food, because alcoholics can stay away from bars, and we can't stay away from food. And that day, that night, I thought about that. That night, I thought, well, you know, it's not all food. I don't stay up all night binging on green beans and broccoli. It's certain foods. So I wrote a list, still have it, of all the foods that I overate and I binged on and I had a problem with, and every single one of them had sugar or flour or both. So I decided that night that I'll just try the abstinent model of just abstaining like alcoholics do from alcohol with sugar and flour. And lo and behold, it worked. It lasted a day, and then I remember 3 days, because I was never one to be able to stay on a diet. And then a week, and it's 19 years later. The answer to your question is abstinence is how I figured it out and kept it off. And I still haven't had sugar or flour since then.
Now, that model is used with parents and their children regarding sex. It doesn't seem to work always, though, even with religion behind it and all kinds of enforcement standards. And also in alcoholism and drug addiction, the scenario seems to be about staying away, abstinence, not consuming it. How do you talk to people about overcoming themselves, like the desire, the temptation, this what it appears to be an uncontrollable desire to consume? Because people, you've heard this before, I've heard it, you know, most of my life. I can't control myself, Corey. I can't control myself. There's a demon inside.
If they could, they
me.
Would. Yeah, right? If they could, they would, right? No one wants that.
So do you think that the people themselves are not accountable for their own action? Or do you think it's deeper? What is your position on that?
Okay, so you mentioned, which I've never had this mentioned to me before, but you mentioned sex in terms of abstinence. First thing that I thought of when you said that is it's outer imposed. So by the time I work with people, I have a quiz that people have to go through. Then I have an extensive interview process. And through experience, I have found that I rarely find someone who's ready, because that's what has to happen. You have to be ready. You have to be desperate. You have to have hit bottom. You have to know unqualifiably that you cannot eat these ingredients and lose weight, because basically they've tried every single diet multiple times by the time they get to me. So it's rarely young people either. So it's usually 40 plus women or men who have tried absolutely everything and they're completely at their wit's end. So when that happens, then abstinence becomes more palatable because you don't see any other way out. And the other half, I mean, the Skinny Coach solution is twofold. It's not just the diet. I mean, of course, the diet's important. And eliminating those foods are important because it has been shown for many, many years that sugar is addictive. It stimulates the same part of the brain as cocaine and other addictive substances. It's even been found to be more addictive than cocaine. So there's not many models for moderating an addiction. You know, people try, but in the end, usually people have to get to abstinence. Now, how do the other half of the Skinny Coach solution is the behavioral modification component. So someone has to want it, but then after that, how do we change the brain? How do we change the way they think about it? How do we keep them from eating those things when temptation rises, when triggers happen, things like that? That's the whole coaching method. That's the whole practice of rewiring the brain.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I worked with Dr. Abram Hoffer. He used to live in Victoria. He's the father of orthomolecular psychiatry, and he specialized in the treatment of schizophrenia, manic depression, and depression. But he also dealt a lot with addiction. He was famous for niacin, B6, Primrose. You know, he's a full-on MD plus a PhD in biochemistry, and he was quack in his field of psychiatry. He's the only one that really saw any role for vitamin therapy. Are you into vitamin therapy at all? Do you think that vitamins, specific ones, can help regulate brain chemistry or stabilize the blood sugar?
I do know that supplementation can stabilize the blood sugar. I don't use it in what I do because I keep – people will talk about exercise. It's the same answer. There's lots of things people can do, including exercise, which is fundamental to good health, heart health, mood, energy, all of that. But it actually doesn't have a huge impact on weight loss or, more importantly, in the addictive part. So, in answer to your question about supplementation, I keep my plan very simple because it's so big already. I just make sure that they stay off the sugar and flour and they eat the right food in the right combination and that they do that every day. And if we can get that accomplished without mixing anything else in, then to me, that's my success. Now, over time, do people start, you know, talking more about supplements, talking more about exercise, talking more about all kinds of things, because as the addiction and the habits get reformed, other things start becoming more relevant to people. They want to do more things. They want to try other things. They want to get healthier. But in answer to your question, no, I don't offer specific supplementation for breaking the addiction. I use it through diet and through the psychological techniques.
Well, tell us about the foods that you want people to eat or choose. If you say you can't do this, then what are you saying they can do? What kind of an outline or a dietary regimen would you offer someone typically?
Sure. Yeah, it's very specific in terms of which foods you're eating and in what combination. And it's not food combining. But for instance, we do eat potatoes. But if we eat a potato, we have to have it with a good portion of protein and enough volume of vegetables, because that combination will slow down the release of the glucose from the potato, unlike if you ate the potato by itself. So the food is definitely specific in amounts and in the way it's combined. But with that said, we eat every fruit, every vegetable, any kind of meat, not bacon or sausage, because that has sugar in it. And yes, I know there's some that don't now, but that's just another conversation, very specific. We eat dairy, so I know dairy is very unpopular with lots of people, but we do eat dairy. And grains, so oatmeal, beans, potatoes, rice, quinoa, squashes. I know squashes are a vegetable, but trying to think of some things that people think you're not allowed to eat if you're worried about blood sugars. But we eat quite a number of them. As long as the ingredients don't say flour in them, we can have them.
I understand. You know, I came to the naturopathic consciousness as an athlete, eating a lot of junk, you know, as a young pup, as a young kid growing up in Canada. We have the same crappy diet you guys down south have. That's what saved me. It was a whole food, real food, clean, organic food, right? Food that, you know, the paleo diet, the ancient man, the original diet of our species is based on. But now, what happens with people when they're surrounded by the enemy, more or less, when their family, their friends at work, eating donuts, drinking coffee with cream and sugar? How do you help people initiate a pattern of behavior conducive to their goal that makes it so difficult when they're living in the real world?
Good question. Part of the plan is that we have our menu, what we're going to eat, set out the day before. We have a workbook for it. My girls also send me an email where they commit to it. So basically, they pick their menu the day before. They decide what they're eating the day before. They write it in their book. Then they email it to me. And as part of that email, they commit in writing. Now, this is behavioral modification at its core. You know, they're repeating something over and over. And what they're saying is something along the lines of, I commit to you, my skinny coach, and to me, my skinny self, to eat the following foods tomorrow and not one other bite. And as long as I do, I'll be skinny forever. So they're writing that every day, and it's a matter of fact. This is something we talk about. We also talk daily. And as a matter of fact, you cannot have one other bite than these foods, or you get to eat all of these foods and not one other bite, and then you'll have what you want. And of course, I know what they want. Some people, it might be able to exercise with their kids and get on the floor and play. Some people, it's to wear a dress. Some people, it's so they can get off diabetes medication. Some people, it's so they can have sex with their husband again and not feel embarrassed. Some people, it's all of those things. And I know what it is. So during our calls, I'm reinforcing that. It's surprisingly simple. I mean, I might say something like, okay, they call, there's donuts at the, this actually happened recently. It's funny you bring up the donuts, but she's a teacher and they had donuts in the teacher's lounge. And she said, they keep calling to me. And I said, I just went through it with her. I said, do you want the donuts or do you want to get off the cholesterol medicine? And she hesitated, off the cholesterol medicine. But I just kept asking, okay, do you want the donuts or do you want to wear that black dress for your wedding anniversary in June? Oh, yeah, I do want to wear that dress. And we just keep going until she says, I don't want the donuts. I want those things. And then the urge is gone. So a couple things happen during that. One, time's passing, and time will help urges go away. The other thing is we're stimulating feel-good hormones. Neurotransmitters are being stimulated because she's starting to feel hopeful and see positive things and feel empowered. So that's creating literally the neural habit right there by her even feeling it, much less doing it. And then when she doesn't do it the next hour, the next day, she feels better. And that's releasing more, saying, I don't do that. So if donuts are around, eventually my girls get to a point where I just don't eat donuts. Just like if you were allergic to strawberries, it wouldn't matter how good the strawberries look, how good the strawberry shortcake looks. You just wouldn't eat it. That's where we get. I just don't eat donuts, so they don't become an urge. It doesn't matter what the scenario is. I don't care how upset I am. I don't care how good something looks. It's not a temptation because it's just not something I eat. And that's where I get my girls. That's where I get them mentally, and I stay with them until we're there, and we call that maintenance.
Yeah, that's very good. It's very similar to my own approach that I developed over time. I developed a perception of food associated with disease and pathology and cancer and heart disease by studying research continuously, just day in and day out. I've been doing that for most of my life. And then observation, the first rule in the scientific method, just look at people, and then you see people the way they are, and you can sort of see an outcome. What do you think about the public education system, you know, going to school at different levels, and their position on food and nutrition? Why is it the way it is? You know, they teach math, they teach geology, they teach biochemistry, and they seem to be playing along with the rules of the sciences and physics and all that. But when it comes to nutrition, there's a great gap, a disconnect. Why is that?
Well, I think that's a very, I think it's a very complicated and big question, because I think a lot of it has to do with the food industry and money. But putting that aside, even if people were properly educated, I don't think it would make much of a difference if the food system, if the foods we're still eating are designed to make you addicted and make you sick. That's how they're designed. I don't think, even though it's not taught in the school, I don't think education of what is good for you or bad for you, or even the details of it, makes a person be able to lose weight. Some people, but I think in general, it's a little bit deeper in terms of the habits, in terms of the foods they've been fed that have made them addicted, in terms of psychological things. So I don't know that knowing information about nutrition would necessarily do the trick. Although, of course, I'm not against it.
Right. I get you. What kind of a role does self-worth or self-esteem play in all of this?
That's a very interesting question. So a lot of my clients have gone to therapy, and I think people who feel addicted to something, they feel like they should, or feel out of control, go to therapy. And it doesn't matter. I don't believe it matters for most people, or at least the people I work with. I try to not be too specific here, but I don't think all the therapy in the world can break that addiction without changing the diet. It's like you can, you know, like with alcoholics, they don't say go to therapy first. They say give up the alcohol first. So what I tell my girls is, well, do the plan, lose the weight, then you'll find out what your real issues are. If you still have deep-seated psychological issues, if you still have insecurities, then you can work with them, because now you're thin and healthy, so it's not the weight, right? See what that eliminates, and then go do the work.
And the work, I guess, in part, you talked about exercise. How much of a role does that play in the success for your clients? And what kind of exercise do you advocate typically?
I don't recommend or require any exercise, because, again, I try to be very specific on what they're promising so that I don't combine them. For instance, let's say they're doing their food perfectly. I've had people say, can I commit my exercise to you too, because I can't seem to do it? I would say no, because let's say they do that. So they're staying on the diet, they're losing weight, their health's getting better, they're conquering the addiction, and then they add in exercise, but they don't exercise. Then all of a sudden, their commitment to me and their commitment to the plan is compromised. So I try to leave just the bare bones. Now, what happens naturally, however, is as they lose weight, as they feel the success, as it's going, the people that don't already exercise start wanting to exercise. I've had many women never even run to the mailbox, do the LA Marathon, the Boston Marathon, all different kinds of hobbies and activities get picked up, because when you're not thinking about food, when you're not obsessing about dieting, when you're not obese, all of a sudden you have a lot of time, you know, and energy. And so that's when exercise seems to start coming in naturally. If people ask my advice, I tell them, because these are women, usually women and men over 40, I say weight-bearing exercises are going to be your best bet, because of the loss of muscle, you know, not from the diet, but from age.
One of the theories that takes a shot at explaining human behavior is associated with the pain-pleasure principle. You know, hedonism is a term used to describe the nature of many humans. Is this overeating simply a matter of inducing pleasure at the time merely for the pleasure, or is it something much deeper?
I think it's something like that, but it's not just merely for the pleasure. When you eat these foods, they, you know, releases a whole host of feel-good neurotransmitters in the brain. And so it feels good. It's not made up, and it's not just for the sake of eating. I mean, when you have a cupcake, when you have a donut, it releases a lot of feel-good hormones, and you will feel better. You will feel comforted. You will feel a surge of happiness, and it lasts for a little while. So it's very rewarding. So to break that is difficult. And if you're asking me, do I think it's a psychological issue? No, I don't. I think it's more of a biochemical issue in the brain that becomes a psychological issue.
Right. Very good. Now, your definition of skinny might not be like it is typically thought of. You know, picking on a skinny kid in school or calling an ecto in the gym, long arms, long legs, long neck, very lean, hardly any weight, calling them skinny. What's your definition of skinny?
My definition of skinny is anyone who's at the weight they want to be and are in control of their eating. And the reason I use that word is because women, I don't use it with my men. With my men, I call them manly men. With my girls, I call them skinny girls. So the reason I use that word is because women like the idea that they like the way it sounds. So I call them skinny girl from day one. Hey, skinny girl, how's it going? So it's doing a couple things. One, it's reinforcing that they already are. The day you start, the day you don't drink, you're a recovering alcoholic. So the day they start, they're a skinny girl. They're a person who's controlling what they eat, even if it was for just the first meal or the first day. That's what it means to me. But in terms of actual weight, I'm not that kind of skinny. I'm a completely average, healthy weight. I'm 5'7" and I weigh 145 pounds. That is hardly skinny. I'm a solid size 8. So it's not about getting bone skinny at all. And very few of my girls do get bone skinny. They just get average, normal weight. In terms of weight, that's what it means. But in terms of what I really mean by the skinny coach and skinny girls and skinny is a state of mind and a control over your body, which leads to a healthy weight.
Can you tell us something about your Skinny Coach cookbook?
My Skinny Coach cookbook is actually just a series of recipes, either in complete meal form, because remember I said the food's combined, so protein, a grain, and a certain amount of vegetables. So it has a series of those, one pot meals kind of thing, and then it has each component has a series of recipes. So some vegetable recipes, some fruit recipes, some snack recipes, some breakfast recipes. And it came together from all my girls contributed, not all of them, but anyone could contribute what they figured out they could make and recipes that I had done over the years.
Very good. And what about calorie counting? Do you get your skinny girls to count calories?
No, we don't do that. We do it by weight, really. It's amounts. So it doesn't matter if it's 4 ounces of chicken or 4 ounces of steak or 4 ounces of fish. Obviously, there is a difference in calories. But for what I do, for the goal of balancing the blood sugars, it really matters more that it's in the right combination. And, of course, the amount helps people lose weight. I mean, it's not a low calorie by any stretch of the imagination. It's not low fat. It's not even low carb. It's pretty moderate. But the average weight loss is about 10 pounds per month. So, and that's for even people who only have 30 pounds to lose or, you know, 100 pounds to lose. And I think that it's because when you get the blood sugar right, when you're feeling right and you're eating consistently, whether it's chicken or steak or fish or whatever it is, if you eat consistently over the months, you know, your body just kind of regulates and starts losing at a normal pace. And 15 pounds is fairly normal. It's very healthy. It's a fairly healthy weight loss.
Yes, it sounds like it. Well, what is your website address? What will we find there when we get to your website?
Right. So it's skinnycoach.com and pretty much everywhere. So on YouTube or on Facebook, it's all Skinny Coach. So it's www.skinnycoach.com. You will find videos that I've done, TV interviews I've done. You'll see my newsletter there, which is health tips. I call them my Skinny Girl Diaries, which you can sign up for. And most importantly is the quiz. Of course, there's testimonies, but the quiz is what people, if they're interested in trying to abstain from sugar and flour and break an addiction, the first step is the quiz. So you take the quiz, and then you have an opportunity to schedule that interview I told you about. It's really more of an intake. And then it goes from there. But, you know, it's a typical website, testimonies, my story, and the quiz.
Yes, but it's a great site, too, because you got some really good interviews. And I was intrigued by how relaxed you are just talking about yourself. That's an issue that I find really touchy for a lot of so-called gravitationally challenged people. You know, you just can't go there because it's like they're threatened by a discussion that relates to their size. And yet you seem to be very comfortable in the same way that maybe an ex-tobacco smoker or an ex-alcoholic might be. And is that the goal, ultimately, to get to that state of comfort?
I never thought of that. I am comfortable. And I guess the reason I'm comfortable is because I feel healthy and I feel, you know, I don't think of it much anymore, but, you know, of course I feel empowered. I broke this thing, and I know it was a long time ago. I know it was 19 years ago, but I was still overweight longer than I've been thin, you know, and I still am acutely aware that I do this, and I have done this. It is a significant achievement, not just the business, of course, is, but I mean doing it myself and keeping it off. And I do the diet every day, right? So I'm always, besides for being the skinny coach and helping other people, I do it. I don't eat sugar flour. I follow it. So, yeah, I suppose I am pretty comfortable with it. I talk about it a lot, and I'm not ashamed of it. And I think the number one reason I am able to coach people is because I am them. I don't know if someone could do it if they hadn't had this exact problem. I'm not so sure that, you know, you could, because it gets really, really relatable at the end of the day. When we're talking on the phone, I really have to be able to relate at a deep level, and I'm not sure you could just academically.
Gotcha. Well, our time is gone. Thanks so much for an excellent interview, your insight, and you're quite charming, and your information is excellent. Thanks so much, Tiffany.
Well, thank you. That was quite a compliment.
I'd like to ask you one more question here to finish off. That would be, you're speaking now to someone out there who's challenged by what you've said. They know that they need to lose so-called weight, or more specifically fat, and they want to do it for the right reasons. What's the number one thing that they can do by initiating within themselves what it is that they have to do? Like you said at the very beginning of the interview, that no one's going to do this unless they want to. You can't take a hammer and make them do it, right?
Right.
So that person that has to get to that place, that they're right on the edge, they're right on the cusp, what has to go on inside of them? Where do they find that place? Like, you found it, others have found it. Is it a spark? Is it a bolt of lightning from the divine? Like, where does it come from?
Okay, well, the people that I work with, it comes from me, and this is interesting because I said education isn't the point, but it comes from me telling them, right? Some people never think, they don't think that they can have this food, or they don't think that they can not have these foods. So my confidence, my experience, I tell them, no, this is what you can do. So they buy in. You know, they buy in to me as an expert, and I help them, and I help them do it. I would never want to make anyone feel powerless. But when it comes to addiction, I do think it's extraordinarily difficult to do it on your own. I think very few people are lucky enough to have that lightning moment that lasts unless they actually have help, you know, and people feel really bad that they can't. I think you said something, I think you asked me something along the lines of how does it make them feel when they can't do it? And it's really psychologically and psychically devastating not to be able to control what you put in your mouth. And ultimately, of course, you can control it, but they can't. If they could, they would. And when you can't control what you put in your mouth, you know, you feel a sense of powerlessness. I mean, what can you control? It becomes everything. Over time, it's not just the weight. It's the lack of control that is just terrorizing people. And I don't know the answer on how to do it, except for how I do it. You know, that's all I actually know. I know some people do it different ways and it works for them. And nothing else. I work with the people who have tried absolutely everything. I mean, just They have to have tried everything or I won't even touch them. Because this is the last straw, right? Abstinence is the worst case model. No one should have to be abstinent from anything if they don't have to be. So if you haven't tried everything else, you should try that first. Because why give up donuts? I don't know. They know they're not good for you and no one should eat them. But why have to not eat them ever if you can moderate them? If you can have one once a year or whatever. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it answers the question. It's beautiful. I was laughing when you were speaking because I can see myself. I'm 15 years old and I'm arguing with my mother and she's saying, no, you can't have sex with your girlfriend. It's wrong. It's immoral. You have to be married. And I said, Mom, I'm a nice guy. I love my girlfriend. What's wrong with it? That's why I was kind of laughing because you're saying, why do we need to be abstinent if there's nothing wrong? Because I didn't see anything wrong with it at the time, and I still don't personally, because that model of abstinence, as you know, can be taken to such a bizarre extreme with legality and fundamentalism and law and rigorous penalties. That could be probably worse than the actual deed itself.
Sure, and certainly not enforceable. It has to come from within. It just has.
Yes, very, very good. Dr. Tiffany Wright, the LA Skinny Coach, is an internationally recognized health advocate and weight loss expert. Tiffany, we thank you very much for the work you're doing, for the work you've done, and the great work that you're going to continue doing in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.